Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
So we're going to get to Colossians 3 in just a second, but I did want to do a little bit of review because what we're about to talk about tonight has a lot to do with what is talked about in the very beginning. So if you go back to chapter 1, but also if you go back to chapter 1 and 2 of our Bibles, when God created man, He designed us to be two things. One of those things was to be spiritual creatures, and the other one was to be workers and keepers. And I think those are important for two reasons. Yes, because God told us that that's what He wanted us to be, and He calls us to be as men. I think the first one is important because we have to make sure that a part of our core of our conversations, the core of our identity, is not our jobs. While the job is part of the working and keeping, but first is to be a spiritual being, but also for us to be people that talk about spiritual things together. I know for me, it's easy to talk about sports. It's easy to talk about different outdoor activities and things like that, but I even find myself at times not engaging or talking about maybe spiritual things. So we are spiritual creatures. The other part is this, workers and keepers. And if you go back to the Hebrew of that term, it's really interesting because it's very similar to what we would call a leader. And I want us to think about that, and here's why. Because one of the comments that he makes in the book is this, that people around us will suffer if we as Christian men aren't who we need to be, and so are we. So he was basically saying if we aren't going to be those spiritual creatures, and if we aren't going to be those workers and keepers, wherever that is, maybe it's in your job, maybe it's at your home, whatever that looks like, the people that are around us are going to suffer, but we ourselves are not stepping into that calling God has given us, and we are going to suffer too. So I want to give us that from the very beginning. And so what we talked about last week or the last 2 weeks is one of the decisions, if we're going to be the men they need or we need, is to forsake the fake and relish the real. And if you were with us in that class and topic, one of the things that we mainly talked about is how we've made a very unfortunate exchange in our life. A lot of times, whether we choose, whether it's alcohol, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a pornography, whether it's social media, we often make this trade of forsaking what is fake for what is real. And we talked about the consequences of when we do that. One of the consequences we talked about, yes, part of it is that we're not stepping into what God wants us to be, but the other part is we looked at the anxiety, the depression, the suicide that has also happened as we keep making this trade for what's fake. And the danger of making the trade for fake versus real is the more you go for the exaggerated fake, whether it's alcohol, social media, or whether it's pornography, you start to lose your appetite for the real. And we talked about some ways that we make that trade. And it's kind of like the food illustration we talked about. The more you eat the bad things, the more you start to lose your appetite for the things that can help you the most. And so we talked about different ways to not make that trade. We talked about it's not enough. And I love this conversation I had with Jason as he talks about technology and things like that. And I think about the young men that have been in my office before in their struggles with pornography. It's not enough just to say, hey, stop. They're like, well, I want to stop. And we discuss that it's not just enough to say, don't do it to ourselves. We also have to put something, and as we put it, someone in its place. That's what Galatians 5 was about. It's not just removing something. It's about putting something there in its place. So that's a summation of all the things that we talked about. So today, we're going to get to the next decision, and that is this one. Choose today who you're going to become tomorrow. Choose today who you're going to become tomorrow. And so as we think about that, this is one of the first things that popped into my mind. I don't know if y'all remember this app that was very popular around 2019 to 2020. It was called Aging Booth. There were several other versions of it, Age Yourself. I forget what the other one was called. But basically what you would do is this. You would download this app and you would put in your age and your information. And it was a really, really good way for us to give our information to people in China. And so we did that and we downloaded it on our phones and also gave them pictures of us. So anyway, long story short, people were downloading this app. It was one of the top five most downloaded apps that year. And what you would do is you would put your picture in it and you would fast forward and say 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, what am I going to look like? What am I going to become? And here's what was interesting though, is the biggest group of people that downloaded this app were 50 and over. Is that shocking to you? But what does that tell you, maybe? Anything that tell you? Okay, even the elderly. And so you just called people over 50 elderly? I'm just kidding, but it's a good point that even as you get older, you're still wondering, I wonder what I'm gonna be. All right, any other thoughts?
Really young ones don't wanna see.
Yeah, they don't wanna see, yeah. So I was trying to find my picture of it. I look like Colonel Sanders, it turns out, in 2060 something, or whatever year that was. I thought it was interesting, and especially in light of this topic, who are we going to become one day? It kind of shows you that no matter what stage of life you're at, you're kind of asking that question. You're wondering, who is it that I'm going to become? And you think about it, you start like that when you're a kid. You kind of have that wonder. I know my sister, when she was little, she really enjoyed drawing out her wedding dress and her wedding. She would like draw out what she wanted her wedding dress to be and what the wedding would look like. She's very into like flower arrangements and stuff like that. She would draw everything. And my mom actually sewed her that exact wedding dress that she was drawing as a little girl. But it's not just for girls that do that. We do that. When you were younger, did any of you kind of try to picture in your mind, I wonder who it is that I'm going to marry? In fact, I had a conversation with somebody recently, and he was talking about, yeah, even when I was young, I was praying, God, please give me a pretty Christian woman. God, please give me a pretty Christian woman. I would dare to say we've all kind of prayed a prayer similar to that. We like the idea of wondering what we're going to become. But here's the thing that I want us to notice as he's going to talk about in this book is the future is really not that mysterious. It's not. And there's a quote that I have in one of my Bibles from high school. It says this, that future you is an exaggerated version of current you. Future you is an exaggerated version of current you. And it's the idea that the choices you're making, the choices I'm making right now, is what's going to impact one day what I'm going to become, right? We say this with our kids in a lot of different ways. Have y'all ever heard this statement? You are who you date, or who you date is who you're going to marry. Do you think that's true? Yes or no? Why do you think that's true? I saw a lot of yeses. I did see one no. Well, there you go. Okay. Yeah, you're not going to marry someone you didn't date. Any other thoughts? All right. Any other examples of something like that? I've heard, you know, you are who you're going to be around. There's a book I have that said you are the sum total of the five people you spend the most time with. Would you think that's true? All right.
My dad always used to say the saying of, you're not going to soar with eagles if you hang on a chicken.
All right, there you go. That's a really good one. That's a good one. One of the things that when I think about the Aging Booth app, by the way, that's Dwayne Wade down there. He didn't look too much different to me. But that I used to think that it's time and one day, right, things are going to change. Here's where I thought about this. I go back to even my like premarital counseling days. And if you had premarital counseling, maybe you had this happen, that I took, and Brandon and I use this with people that are planning to get married, is this assessment that basically shows what your strengths are going to be and your growth areas as a couple. And I remember seeing those growth areas, which was an encouraging way to say weaknesses, okay? And said, oh, when we get married, I'm going to have no problem with that. Like, that's going to be a piece of cake. When we get married, I'll get better at that. When we do this, it's going to get better. Well, here's the reality. Time doesn't fix things. Time can be a resource to gain wisdom, but time does not change who we are. Time itself doesn't. It's what we do with that time. And so it's a choice we have to make every single day. So with that, this is what he said on the very first page. Who we become is a direct result of what we choose to pay attention to. So I want you to think about that phrase, pay attention. And I want you to think about, just for you, what is it that you pay attention to? Now, as you think about this, you know, we talk about future us. I would like to know if any of you would like to share, if, you know, you today could tell you something 20 years ago, is there something you would have told yourself? Knowing what you know now, and you're like, oh man, I probably got a list. And we probably
just
all
don't. Just don't.
Just don't. Yes. Just don't.
You made it.
You made it. Who would have thought? All right. Anybody else? Anything in particular? Specific?
Only my mom's going to remember what my GPA was in college.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a, you know, it's funny you said, because I was thinking about things that I used to get wrapped up in high school, and that were like the biggest deal on where they're at on the totem pole. Even in college, things like that. All right. Brandon? Yeah. In case you didn't hear that, he said, give yourself a little grace.
You're going to make mistakes. And you know, depending on how you grew up, sometimes your mistakes were like punitive forever, it felt like. And it doesn't need to be that way. You need to be able to move past your mistakes, change your behavior, and not have to continually relive those things over and over.
Yeah. Awesome. Anybody else? You're right where you're supposed to be. Okay. All right. So you're basically saying, from the standpoint of God has something he's doing here. And that's good too, because, you know, maybe y'all have lived under this illusion before that life is just the next big thing, right? When the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And the challenge of that is it makes you sometimes miss what's here, right? What's that? Something about the quote about your feet, be where you are, or something like that. All right. Anybody else? All right. An example to me of somebody who became something based on what they chose one day or several days is Samson. He's my go-to example whenever I think of something like this. Do y'all remember back when Samson was going to be born? God gave him a heads up that he was with two things. Number one, you're going to have incredible strength, and you're going to have all the capacity and the ability to lead, right? There's just a few things I need you to stay away from. Do y'all know what those were called? They're part of a vow. Do y'all remember what that was?
Nazarite vow.
Nazarite vow. What were the three different parts of that Nazarite vow that God gave Samson that he said, don't violate these three things? What were those three things he didn't want Samson to violate? Don't cut your hair.
Alcohol.
Don't touch anything unclean, dead, and alcohol, and don't cut your hair. And those might seem a little random, but those were protective measures that God was putting in place, because he said, hey, you are somebody that I see something very strong in. I see something very special in. And the Bible says this, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. Okay? But here's what you'll notice. How did he do with all three of those?
Horrible.
Which one did he violate? All of them. But is there a common denominator you notice in his life that caused him to violate all three of those? Lack of self-control, Delilah. One thing you'll notice that is a common pattern is he kept not being where he was supposed to be. That was a common issue for him. And here was the other problem, is if you notice, his parents were kind of passive with his poor decisions. There wasn't a time where they really... He went down to the women at Timnah, and turns out you don't just go down to Timnah. It's not like, hey, I was just walking by Timnah. He went out of his way to go there. And what you notice is his parents didn't really intervene. It kind of makes me think in a way of the priest, Eli. Do you remember his sons and some of the poor decisions they made? Part of the challenge for them is when they made poor decisions, what did dad not do? Swept it under the rug, didn't deal with it, right? So that was part of it. But I had this up here that Samson, kind of like us, this is why we're thinking of today, how it impacts tomorrow. He didn't ruin his life all at once, okay? but it was one step at a time. That's why we looked at Psalm 1 the other day in this class to talk, and we looked at Proverbs 5 about the enticement of a woman. That if you notice in Psalm 1 and Proverbs 5, there was a progression, right? It wasn't just like, well, how did I get in the bed with her? And it wasn't just, well, how am I standing with the company of fools? Well, I'll tell you, you made several decisions little by little, and that's why you are where you are. Samson didn't get there all at once. And so if you look at Judges 15, very end of Judges 15, there's a phrase there that said that Samson led and judged. And the idea of judge was meaning that he was doing his job for 20 years. One verse points out the fact that Samson did do his job for 20 years. But then look what it says. One day. So he is about to, as we'll put it here, risk 20 years of faithfulness by traveling 25 miles. One day, it said, he went to Gaza. Turns out Gaza was 25 miles from where he was. And here's why that matters to me. He was walking this walk, or however he got there, and somewhere along the lines, as he's walking, knowing what's in that direction, he was reasoning in his own mind, right? He was maybe doing what someone brought up a good point last week, is that maybe part of our challenge at times is we might think, well, I deserve this. I've had a rough day. I've had a rough week. That because of what's happening here, it's almost as if I deserve this. We don't know what it was, but somewhere along that 25 miles, he decided not to turn around and kept going and kept going and kept going. And so I thought about that with us as men. Who would make that trade? Well, us, men do. We can do that all the time if we realize and make serious every single one day, every single moment, to not risk that faithfulness. I love this graph, and if you were in our leadership class, I guess 3 years ago, I shared this. And I love this graph. It was in a leadership theory class I had, and the teacher, one of the things he pointed out is if you ask most young men about what they want to do one day, he said, they will tell all about this, how they want to lead this and lead the community, lead things that are, he said, the challenge is leadership works from the inside out. It's the idea that we want to do things to impact other people, but we haven't mastered yet leading ourselves. And we will always be, right, our toughest leadership challenge. And so he says, you know, the individual course is you. The group is maybe your family. It might be your close friends. And then this takes care of itself. So the individual is, you first have to have an awareness of who you are. Really, who am I, right? This was a challenge for David. This is a challenge for us. Understanding leadership foundations, having faith, value, and ethics. Here's what's interesting. Harvard is the one that put this out. But to me, this is a picture of a deeper spiritual truth, is learning how to lead us well. So here's the text I want us to get into tonight that talks about what we put before us and what we pay attention to. Colossians 3. Someone read this. This is verse 2 and then verses 5 through 8. Colossians 3, verses 2 through 8.
Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Put to death, therefore, the components of your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming on the sons of disobedience. When you lived among them, you used to walk in these ways, but now you must put aside all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips.
All right. Is there anything you think for us as men, and what is it that is really pertinent, that sticks out to you in this verse about me, about you? Anything stick out to you?
Covetousness.
Okay, how do we do that?
I had a friend that came into town, and they had a really nice new car. And so I have a car that's fine, and then I'm just like, they left town, and I'm like, all right, how can I try to figure out how to get this car, almost equivalent car?
Yeah, awesome. All right, what else? Any other examples of things you see up there? That's a very good point. And so if you didn't hear what Joseph said, he was basically pointing out this part, which says that all of these are idolatry.
And I love that because we need to see sexual immorality as also idolatry. It's setting something or an experience above God. Impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. Good point. All right, anybody else?
Evil desire is kind of just seeing more ambiguous or broad in some of the other ones. Maybe it's just a translation thing. That's a wide topic.
Yeah.
It's almost the song that's image of what is desire, right? Is that like we're being tempted? That's, typically you say being tempted is a sin, right? So what does that desire mean? You know, is that just maybe you're surrounding yourself by things like Samson was, putting yourself in those situations where you're desiring those things more.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too, because the desire, evil, what you desire is impacting, what you pay attention to, excuse me, is impacting what you're going to desire, right? What you put before your eyes, that was Samson's issue. He didn't just happen to be near Delilah, he put before him, he desired it, right? He saw, one of the things in I don't remember what chapter it was, but when he saw the honey and the lion, and when he got drunk, he said, for this is good for me to do. So he, that was part of his, like he justified in his own mind that. So, yeah, Craig?
Yeah, I think obscene talk is really interesting in this day and age because growing up it used to be four letter words. And now it's like people try to strive to just blur the lines and do whatever they can. And so, you know, I think if anything, we need to give thought, just give thought to the things that we're saying. Just, you know, just to make sure that it's not offensive to those that we're around. And that doesn't mean we need to be different in different scenarios, but do we think about the words that are coming out of our mouth?
Yes. Is it Ephesians 4, when he talks about our words can lock us up? It's the idea that our words have way more weight. James 1 and 3 talks about the same thing, right? Our words have big time weight. Craig?
So you mentioned earlier the idea about it's not just shying away from things, it's replacing them. To me, the first sentence there that says set your minds on things that are above, and the word therefore in the next sentence to me says that's what this is there for, and only by doing those things can death all these other things, right? You have to put something in its place, otherwise it's still going to be there even no matter how you try to touch it, right? It's going to be there no matter what, because we're imperfect, but we have to crowd it out with the other things in order to get rid of it, to put it to death.
Hold on to what he just said about crowd it out and put to death. We're going to come back to that in a second.
That was the one that kept sticking out to me, the finality of it. They work on it. It doesn't say, you know, make it less. It says kill it. Kill it.
Yep. All right. We're coming back to that. Awesome. Brandon?
Thing you want to talk about, but it's basically that put to death part is remove its power over you. That's the another part of it. Take away its power that it has over you.
So now that they already brought it up, we're going to come back to it, but it does, like what Brandon said, is the idea of removing the power and its influence, colon, make dead. Hold on to that, okay? Some other thoughts on this verse?
To me, it's more striking than kind of verse 7, and those you to once walked when you were living in them. To me, it sounds like a confession. Because, you know, you have to admit if you're doing something wrong. And then when you are putting that in your mind, then you go, but now you must put away those things.
Yeah, awesome. And that's important for what we're about to read too. Anybody else before I... Yeah, Paul.
One thing that stands out to me is when it says what is earthly in you. So all those things by nature are within you, and it basically points out to me that it's going to be a battle. It's not going to be easy at all, and you're really going to have to fight hard for it.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. All right, so before we get to put to death, because we're getting there in just a second, we got to give some context to what we just read. Look at verse 1. And what does this context, how does this context, impact all those things? Because I look at that, I'm like, well, I want to do that. Like, I want to be good with my anger, my wrath, my malice, my covetousness. I don't want to have, like Andrew talked about, evil desires. Like, that's pretty broad. Like, I don't want to do... What does the context have to do with what we're about to see? Read verse 1, somebody.
Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God.
Okay. How does this, that, impact that?
Baptism's not the end of our walk. It sounds like it's the beginning.
There you go. When we put on Christ, let's kind of give it as this example. What if we did with our kids? All right, when you get to the age of, we're going to feed you really well to get to 6. And when you hit 7, good luck, right? We don't do that with them, right? There's still steps, right? He's saying that once you have been raised with Christ, there's a connection between your raising and your seeking, right? Anything else you notice in that verse? What is Christ doing? His redemptive work is finished. Kind of reminds me of what Brandon said earlier about he could tell something to past self, give yourself a little bit more grace. I think about that with that, the picture, this is similar to Hebrews. If you remember the Hebrews, it says that he is seated, right, at the right hand of God. And the seated, if you were a king and you were standing, that meant that there was still a battle to be fought. If he's seated, that means the battle is won. And it's the idea that we are fighting from a place of victory, not for it, which is a big difference. That the victory in Christ has been won. Now, how does that impact us as men to know that Christ has won that battle? Satan can't make you do anything. There's the phrase, the devil made me do it. Now, the Bible says, you know, he's a roaring lion. He will try to tempt us. But the Bible also says with him and his influence that there is always a what? There's always a way of escape. Yeah. So imagine, to me, it's a very heavy mind sport, and you can get in your own mind going through shooting slumps, wherever, basketball. Like, if you knew in a basketball game, like, you were going to lose, and you go the free throw line, how's that going to go? Probably. You're like, evidently I'm going to miss this because I know I'm on the losing team. But then if you have the confidence in the very beginning to know that you're winning on the winning side, does it let you breathe a little bit? But also give you the confidence. It's not a false confidence, guys. This is a gospel-generated confidence. It's real. That's where we're operating from. Any other thoughts, Craig?
You know, I think of James 4:7, you know, where it says, therefore submit yourself to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. You know, so many times we think we've got to fight the devil. And really all we got to do is just resist.
Yes. Good point. Very good point. All right. So let's go back to, two things. He says, once you've been raised. And I want us to think about this for a second. What did Jesus do after he was raised? Okay, because you just mentioned, all right, that once it's not over once we've been raised. There's something next. Just for fun, what did Jesus do after he was raised?
He ascended and seated.
Okay, he was ascended and seated. Okay. So ascended, that may, one way we could put to it, he looked to heaven, right? He was looking upward, kind of going back to what we saw earlier. Set your mind on things above, all right? What else? Someone said something that was, I heard.
He ate,
right? And he was seated around the table with people who were very discouraged. And in that, do you remember what he did? He just sat and listened to them, right? And their hurts, broke bread with them. And then what ended up happening? Who did they realize he was? He was the Savior, right? Through the eating of bread. Anybody else? Yes, he ministered to people. He ministered to other people. All right, anybody else? Yeah. Went to Thomas. Isn't that interesting of why he picked him? What does that tell you about us? And I think about it from the standpoint of... So one of the things I used to say growing up sometimes is I'm bored, and my parents had a statement they always said, or dads always said, is there's no such thing as a bored Christian. And what they basically were meaning by that is there's always, always something you need to improve on. There's always somebody that needs love. There's always somebody that needs encouragement. And I think about all the things that we just mentioned about what Jesus did right after he was raised. I think that's also a parallel for us to understand after we are raised, we have a job, right? And one of the examples that they gave in the book is that when people think outside of themselves, he gave the example of a mission trip. Brandon can probably expound on this more too, if you've taken kids on overseas mission trips or did anything service. The quickest way to fix pride is serving people outside of your comfort zone. Why is that? Yeah, it's not your environment. And this was the quote. He said, I took a bunch of high schoolers over to Juarez, Mexico to build houses. We camped in tents outside the city. It was exhausting, sweltering work. Once near the end of our trip, I asked some of the guys I'd long had a long rapport with, so have any of you been struggling with lust this week? And he said, of course, they were like, actually, no. Lust had been their number one issue back home, but it wasn't in Mexico. Here's why. They were too busy serving other people. Their mind was on other things. They were structuring their lives differently, and everything else in that moment was falling into place. Remember what we said? What we pay attention to is everything. What did Jesus do? We made the list. Left the tomb. So should we. He ministered to other people. So should we. He sat with at a table, discouraged people, and he looked up to heaven. So, let's go back to put to death. That phrase, put to death, I like the ending part of one of the Greek definitions was to make dead. And I think about what Wesley said in conjunction with that. When I hear put to death, maybe you've done what I've done and justified it in my own mind that maybe what he means is just suppress it. Push it to the side, you know, ignore it. Well, that's not what that means. Put to death means to make dead. So it's not suppress, it's wipe out. So how do we as men, and I don't even know if I spelled this right. When I look at it, it doesn't look right, so it may not be. How do we, men, suppress when God has asked us to wipe out? Is there something we do anything with? Like, is that a challenge you think we have? Yeah, we. One of the ways I think about was Samson, okay? He flirted with disaster all the time. Like, he was just constantly around it. And so maybe we can think about that with us as men. What do you keep around you at, like, a safe, comfortable distance? Maybe that you've been suppressing, but you haven't wiped out. Example that I ended up talking with somebody after class about when they talked about the phones and social media, their rule for the bedroom with their wife, because, and I'm sure none of you have ever had this problem, you get in bed and then you just start scrolling and you end up, you know, 45 minutes later after watching cat surfing videos, you're like, man, I really got to get to bed. And what was mentioned was they put their phones up away from the bed, put them on chargers away from the bed in order for them to pray together, to talk together, and to have intimacy together. And I thought about that example with this, that I know for us, like one of the things we've talked about before is we got to do better at that. And I can say that I do that with everything and so many things. When it's one thing to talk about it, but to choose to start filling that gap between intention and action. And saying, you know what? I've been suppressing this. I'm going to make a change. I'm going to put it on a charger over here. And like I told you last week, as that person said, it made them more productive, right? They had to get up and they had to move towards it. But it also helped other things in life. Any other before we?
Sometimes we think better that what God is asking us to do. Like, there's a biblical story that, you know, God asked to wipe that whole nation out. But the king decided, no, I'm going to keep whatever's best, and I'm going to give it an offering. And then the prophet came, so you didn't listen what God asked you to do. And because of that, you will be having the consequence of not listening and obeying God.
That you haven't given over completely to Jesus is not wiped out. When you're trying to do things on your own power and your own righteousness and your own ability, you're only suppressing. You're never taking care of the problem. Only Jesus can.
And I think what Satan likes to do, so we don't have what you're basically saying is dependence on Jesus and surrender to Him. I think Satan likes to give us a lot of little bitty victories to give us this false confidence that we got it, that we can do this. And I think about, and this is a weird way to put it, but like, you know, with Abraham and Isaac, when God told him to sacrifice Isaac, one thing that I didn't notice till last week or something, I think it was last week, and I just kind of forget, it was a 3-day journey for them to make that walk up to Mount Moriah. It's easy to make a really hard, good decision on day one. It's very difficult to keep making good decisions on day two and three. And I'm glad you made that point because, yeah, it's making sure that we're surrendering it all and not just day one. All right, anybody else? All
right. So a long time ago, not long after I married Carrie, my wife, I already had two children and another one coming. We just want to get it all done and close together as possible. Anyway, I wanted a horse or horses since I was really little. You know, and I got older and I rode some horses with friends. And we were way too poor to have a horse, even a horse. And I remember at some point in our first year of marriage, I decided, give it up, kids. You just do not, you're never going to have time or the money to spend on that. I was around in the job I had for a while in that first year. And the second thing was, you know, maybe like half the people in here, I was going to play guitar and do it really well, perform somewhere, you know, doing something, even if it's bluegrass. But at some point I decided, that's just never, ever going to be something that I could really conscientiously do. So I actually kind of considered putting, the way I did it was I just talked to God about it and I said, yeah, I'm not ever going to have a horse. There's just no way, because I love them. Like, it would just take so much of my mental energy and all that. Same thing with guitar. But I have a bunch of other little stupid stuff. Honestly, you get down to it. Just stupid little things that I really want to do. Or maybe I'll work this little crappy thing, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But I got so many little things yet that I just haven't put down and give it up. And I thought of having you ask about this because I think we all have dreams. We think we're good at something. You know, we haven't really filled out. Maybe it's a good thing to pursue, but if there's not enough time for that, I'm already not giving enough time with God and trying to go. And I'm not looking at the spiritual things. These verses are really tied to me before tonight. I'm not long before I need to leave here. And the best thing I can do is work on my servanthood. Exactly what you're saying. Because what he's looking for are the servants, the men who will serve and be unselfish. And I'm still at this age. I don't want to do this little thing or that thing, you know. And there's just so many of those that I think we all have. We're born with so much and so many options. So it's hard to give up those dreams and those options.
Yeah. So we have a good bit to cover. We're going to end here tonight because let's end right here. Because here's what we're going to talk about next week is the important thing is what we pay attention to. Is the Bible talks about this, and I want y'all to be thinking about this, taking every thought captive and giving it to Christ. Taking every thought captive and giving it to Christ. We're going to talk about that next week. But here's my challenge for you today and this week. Because who you're going to be one day is who you are right now. What have you been suppressing that you need to wipe out? I want y'all to think about that for each person. What's something you've been suppressing, keeping close by, keeping within what you feel like is a good enough distance, but it's not. What have you been suppressing that you need to wipe out? All right. Thank you all so much.